Welcome into the Sports Objective. I'm Dave Richmond, along with Bubba Rosenbaum. We've got a great show, got great news. As if you're watching live, Pirates and baseball are up, 11-5, top of the eighth, thanks to our great producer and co-host, Bubba Rosenbaum, one of the best ever in the business. Riley Johnson hit a two-run double to make it 11-5 in the top of the eighth. So we'll keep our eyes on that as we're doing live. We love all sports at East Carolina, as everybody knows how we bleed purple and gold. And with us tonight, the color analyst of the Learfield IMG College team of Jeff Charles at Cy Seymour. How are you, sir?
Good. It's good to hear from you, Dave. Good to see you. And always love to talk basketball. I'm glad the baseball team's winning. I'm like you. I love the Pirates.
No doubt. I stayed up all night at the Learfield IMG College. It's taken me about two or three years to get used to that. I'm just like so old school. As much as I was telling somebody yesterday, Si, as much as I would like to admit that I love change, the older I get, that's just an absolute lie. So just all this changing of names and mergers and all that stuff, I'm like, please keep it the same, because those of us that are, we finally learn how to pronounce something. We finally learn that player graduates. We finally learn about how to pronounce it, and then they change it again. So anyway, glad to have you. It's very exciting to have you on anytime there's tournament time. March Madness is already here. Very proud of the Pirates. I know they've had a tough deal, and I was just talking pre-show with you to start out. You know, with the team goes 7-1 non-conference, we're very excited. And COVID hit, and man, when it hit, it was like a bulldog. It just kept holding on, and it just wouldn't go away.
Dave, you're right on it. And when you look at the non-conference schedule, we did things we don't usually do. We beat Charlotte, we beat Wilmington, we beat James Madison all in the same year. Charlotte on the road, things are looking good. You feel good about your ball club. And then you're getting ready to start the conference season, and all of a sudden, the COVID hits you, the COVID virus hits you, and it really took a lot of momentum out of the ball club. And Joe won't make excuses, but I'll make them for him. I mean, you know, you beat Tulane, but then you go down there, you don't have Joe, you don't have Tristan Newton, one of your better players, and you lose in a close game. And people can say, well, everybody has players hurt. Well, it was the head coach and a player. And in ECU, we're not at the stage where we can miss a player. We're just not.
Right.
He's building his program. And it's like I try to tell people, when you look at Joe, he came in the first year, he had to deal with grade problems. He had to deal with kids that were leaving and did not do well in the books. And so he had to deal with that right away, not even worrying about his own ball club. And then you go through it and you pick a team and you play a year and you say, okay, this year they'll be a 2 year older, they'll be good. And then COVID hits. So I always said this on the COVID for Mike Houston, it's tougher. He's in his second or third year. He's just building. For Cliff, he's been there a while. He knows what he's got. And he's a great coach. But I'm saying he had his team already formed and ready. The other two guys who I think are great hires and I like them in our school, those guys have, you know, they're just starting to build their program. It takes a while. We were talking about Wes Miller today at UNCG. He's a great coach. He's going to the playoffs this year. And we always said, Wes is doing a great job. Wes is doing a great job. He's in his sixth year, and he won the conference tournament. That's the first year he's done it. And look, he doesn't have football to deal with. He's the big king there in Greensboro. But even then, as good a coach as he is, and fine a job as he does, it took him 6 years to win the tournament. And I'm not saying we're at that level in 6 years, but it's hard to build a program. It's just not that easy.
And then you have the fact that, not to mention the fact is, I know you're going to say a big boy league. So you have the America, that's a huge league. I mean, people don't, the thing that drives me crazy is that I'm not anti-ACC like some Pirate fans, but I will say this. I don't think they understand that just because it's not Duke, North Carolina, NC State, Wake Forest, all the Tobacco Road teams at ACC and some others, they don't understand that we have some big boy basketball we're playing. And the thing about the both basketball and football, you say for the league, is it's only getting better, which means that we've got to do better. If not, we're going to get further and further behind in basketball.
No doubt about it. And I think for example, what you're saying this year in the NCAA rankings of 347 teams, we were only three leagues had teams from 160 in. In other words, the top 40 to 50%. Only three leagues. The SEC, our league, and I think the other league was the Big 12. The Big 12. Those are the three leagues that had their teams 1 through 12, 1 through 13 were ranked in the top 160, I think. Whereas the Atlantic Coast, we had several behind us. You know, ECU, in my time, other than the tournament, it's the CIT tournament, we were ranked, we finished the year at 69. This year, all year long, we've been around 150. That's unbelievable for us. We're usually 200 or below. We have been 150, and I'm not sure we're going to finish up. We may finish 159, 150, but it's still higher than we've ever been. And when you're talking about 300-some teams, you're in the top 50 percentile. I know our football program would love to be ranked 60th right now out of 130 teams. It's hard to do. It is hard to do. And this league, I'm telling you, Memphis is like 40 to 50. SMU, 40 to 50. Wichita State, the same way. These teams are good. And then, of course, Houston's ranked in the top 10. So I'm just simply saying this league is a big boy league. You better bring it every night out. We should get three or four in. We won't this year because I think it's probably because of the strength of the Big Ten. They are just unbelievable. This league can give anybody a fit anytime.
No question. And you look at one thing that you take away COVID, I really believe that we're going to be an NIT team, a bubble team. I really believe that. And look at the way we started and then with COVID hitting. But you were talking about next year. Man, Joe and company, I know that he eats streets recruiting. Anybody that knows anything about college sports, you've got to recruit. If you can't recruit, you're not going to win. You can't. If you don't have the players, I don't care how good of a coach you are. You hear that all the time. You're a coach, Si. You got to have the talent.
As I've always said, for junior colleges, our season really was in April and May. What do you recruit? After the big guys get them, what do you get? And that's where you're successful. Well, Joe, I think, has had a tremendous year. And we were talking off air. Saturday a week ago, we didn't have a game. Joe couldn't play, couldn't do anything. We were off. This is before the weekend. It was the weekend before, and I went over to campus to check with Greg Pierce, who runs the video stuff, and he's tremendous at it. It was a girl's game. He wanted to show me how it all works. And Jody and I talk all the time about where are we, what can we do. And I walk out of the room there, the video room, and I see Joe walking around. I go over and I say, Coach, how you doing, buddy? Are you okay? He said, oh, yeah. He said, I'm fine. And we begin to talk about what he's doing. And you're excited once you finish talking with Joe. I mean, his recruiting year has been unbelievable. When you look at what he's got, Alexis Reyes at 6'7", who's a tremendous player. Tay Mosier, who's a shooter. I mean, a 6'7 kid that can really shoot it out of Texas. Russell Felton, who's an athlete, really good guard out of Aiken, South Carolina. And then all of a sudden, new guys show up. Marion Leston is from Ontario, Canada. He's 6'9". When you look at the film on him, he's beautiful. He can do so many good things. And they just started their system of stars, 1, 2, 3, 4, that in Canada. They have four or five-star players. This kid's one of them. He's a 6'9". He can handle the ball. He can shoot it. He can go with it. And he's one of their five-star guys in the whole country. So you get him. Then you get Jaquan Scott, who's at 6'8", who can really play out of Florida. Really good player. You get another one at 6'2", a guard. And then all of a sudden, you get Winston Tabbs. Winston Tabbs averaged 13.5 a game at Wake Forest. I mean, excuse me, at BC. At BC, he was a great ACC freshman, and we just picked him up. He got in the portal, and Joe got him. Now, this is a kid that can really, really light it up. He got 18 against State his freshman year. So this is the recruiting class that's coming in. And I'm just saying, when you look at it, this is going to be a really good recruiting year. And I know we say that a lot, but even then, you'll like this, Dave. Joe says, come on in, sit down with me. I'm looking at guards. He had film on 12 or 14 guards, and he's just breaking it down on Saturday afternoon in his office. And it's just a treat to be with Ian Rock. It was Ian Rock. And they told me I had to be the break tie-breaking vote on any players. I said, no, that's not going to get it. No.
But we know who to blame. We're going to blame Cy if it doesn't work out.
But it was just, it's a treat to see how hard these guys work, what they're getting in, what they're doing. And we should be really supportive at this early stage of what they're doing.
No question. And one tough question that comes to mind, and I know you don't know, but the fans out there, I'm sure, are listening right now or watching. So they'll say, Dave, please ask this question. So I'm going to ask it to you. With all those guys coming in and we have the extra year, you know, I was going to ask you that question. So I'm going ahead and ask it now. Who do you think stays and goes? I know you don't know, but if you had a crystal ball, do you have any ideas? Who stays and goes?
And I were talking, even Joe, nobody knows. No one knows. I think what they're going to do is they're going to step back, see what makes sure comes in. See, the other part is everybody's got to graduate from high school. Everybody's got to graduate. You know, everything's got to fall right. And so they're probably not going to, they're going to try to do it as soon as they can. But if the pieces of the puzzle don't come in, you got to make sure you've got kids that are here. So I wish I could really guess better. I would love to guess. The problem with guessing is, let's say you needed an ex player and this guy didn't come in, then you got to have somebody else. Jaden Garner, of course, you think Jaden will be back. I would think Tristan Newton would certainly be back.
Brandon Suggs.
I would think Brandon would be back. You know, kids like that, you think they played a lot. They're young. They've done a good job. And there are more. It's just hard to say once you get about past about four, what is coach looking for and what is his staff looking for? And are the kids coming in that you've expected to come in? And how do you handle it? You're right. It's going to be something else to see how it's all handled by ECU.
One thing that we've talked about a lot with you, the thing that frustrates me is I'm an inside kind of guy. I know I'm old school, so I like a post players. I love the three ball, but I think that our game has gone way too much to the three ball. But having said that, you have to adjust with the times, and you have to have the shooters that could shoot the rock like at unbelievable video game numbers. It seems like 3-point shooting has been something that has been. I think we're doing better with like free throws. We're doing better at better like jump shots, but the 3-point shooting still seems to be the monkey on our back.
Oh, and you're right. I mean, it is. And to give you an example, when you look at the Cincinnati game, this game was 52-50 with 12 minutes to go. You're right in it. Joe's teams play great defense. That's the one thing that keeps me so excited is that we play defense. And nobody plays as hard as ECU. That's why you beat Houston. You outplayed a team that plays hard every night out and one of the best in the country. Well, he's in this game. He's in a dogfight. He's playing good. And then what happens? Shot clock running down. They throw up a prayer from about 30 feet, and it banks in. So now the 52-50 game goes to 55-50. You go down to the floor, and then you make a bad pass. They get the steal. The same kid knocks down another three. 58-50, and it takes the air out. That's how important the three ball is now. And like you said, we grew up the other way. And I had it both ways in coaching. I had no threes, and then all of a sudden I had a lot of, you know, he had kids playing the three. The first year out, this will tell you something, the average number of threes shot were 8. The first year that they had it in the NCAA. Now you're mad if you don't make 8. it really has changed. But think about the changes we've seen. The 45-second clock to the 35-second clock to the 30-second clock. Everything is built on not working as hard inside. It's the first two passes, and you better – you know what I'm saying is we're used to the high-low game, getting it in the post, working it. Yeah. You got to really move to get that done. The first thing I do, Dave, in a game – is watch how fast teams get down the floor. And if the clock is not, let's say 30 seconds, if it's not around, if you're not down there by 24 or 25, you're going to struggle. You and I looked up the other night, and Joe did a great job. He had them down at some points to 18 to 19 seconds. I'm talking about Cincinnati before they threw their first entry pass. But having said all that, I love the big post game, but I'm telling you, it is a speed. Jody and I talk about it all the time about the speed of the game, the 6'9 kids, and it is a different game. But I think if you can get the big post guy and he's quality, you can really win at any level. You got to have a quality guy, but that's the key.
So let's talk about that. We have 4 7 footers on the team currently. I know that again, no crystal ball there, but do we keep the 7 4 footers, 4 7 footers?
Well, the one young man that was supposed to play this year, he's not going to be back. The kid that we signed, the Kwanzaa kid, he will not be back. He had to leave it, and again, it was COVID related and things like that, and he couldn't. It just a lot of things go on, but he will not be back for next year. Coleman had a high ankle sprain; he couldn't get the games these last few weeks, so. I'm sure he's one you're looking at. I thought Luigi did a good job. He's only played this year. I mean, really. So he did a good job. And then, you know, we don't know about the rest. You know, we just don't know where you go with Edra Luster. I just don't know. It depends on how many bigs you want, you know. But I know one won't be back, and then it's all in Joe's court to figure out what he needs to do.
No question. Speaking of other players, that one player I'm concerned with, and maybe you can get me out of the panic room, but that's Farrakhan. Noah Farrakhan, I'm worried about him. Is he definitely going to be back? What do you think about him?
I like Farrakhan. Dave, he's a treat to watch in warmups. I'm just telling you, he has the skills that are just drop dead. I mean, he can hit 6'1", he walks up. He can dunk it any way you want him to, over quick as lightning. And so I don't know where he stands, though, because he hasn't played a lot. And Dave, part of the problem with us, we're now on the road with him. We don't get to talk to the coaches like we usually do. There's I think, maybe intensity level. It has to be a sense of urgency every time you play in the college game. And you have to have that sense of urgency. If you're in there 30 minutes, 30 minutes. If you're at, you can never take plays off. And maybe that's something part of his game that's missing. I don't know. But I know this. I trust Joe Dooley's judgment. And if he's not playing, he's not ready. Now, is the young kid fair? And this is the problem of the way of the world now. Is he willing to be patient and wait? You know, a lot of these kids nowadays, you know, they're gone. The portal opens up and they're gone. And I don't know where he stands. I know this. He's a talent, but the urgency level, I don't know if it's there for him. And I don't know any other background about it. I don't think he's a bad kid. I know he's pulling for the team. I can see that when we're doing the games. I can look across, kid hits a shot, or when it's a timeout, he's cheering an ECU on. So I just don't know. Don't know enough about that other part of it.
Yeah, I know there's social media people making comments, his friends, and you know how that goes with.
Oh, yeah.
I'm glad I didn't live in the social media the world. But, you know, they hear the AAU coach, they hear their friends chirping in their ears. And as you and I love the game so much, the thing that drives me crazy now is I was thinking about it getting ready a couple of days ago for work, just thinking about how terrible the transfer portal is, how bad now this new rule is going to take effect where you have one time where you can transfer. Our game, the one and done, there's so many issues that I hope that we'll see that we can change up.
It is totally different. And I remember Jeff Lebo saying, what will drive me out is that all the turnover. Because, you know, some coaches, I will say this, and this is important. I think Joe Dooley knows how to handle the changes. Not all coaches can handle these new changes. We have the best guy in the country. I really believe that can handle the portal, the high schools, the AAU. He can handle it all. To not be a blue blood program, there's nobody better than Joe Dooley that can handle all the things that, like you say, we are not used to. I mean, there are going to be 1,000 or more kids in this portal. One of the coaches is in the top of the league, said, I'm not going to recruit high school kids anymore. I'm just going to recruit the portal. And I'm talking about one of the top three or four teams.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's where we are. Joe is in the portal. He's in the high schools. He knows the AAU guys. He knows whoever is anywhere. He knows. That's a good thing for ECU. Really big deal.
Yeah, as far as Noah Farrakhan, while we're on that topic, that was something I was encouraged by on Sunday afternoon. With Noah getting some minutes after having played very sparingly here recently.
Yeah, he got a little time in, and that was good to see. I noticed the game before that, and trust me, I'm watching anything I can. This is after the game. We're doing the post game, and it's just really because it's an empty facility. It's Jeff and I and David Horn doing a great job. Jody's here. And all of a sudden, Farrakhan comes out, and he sits on the scores table by himself, and he's looking down. And, he didn't play. And then I noticed that he went up, and he hugged a couple of people in the stands that were left. It was two of his family members or somebody that were there. That's all I know. But I know it's been a frustrating time for him. But I can also tell you, Joe Dooley is going to do what's best for East Carolina University. That's just the way he is. And I don't know if he's in the plans or not in the plans. I do know this. He is a talent.
As far as what Dave brought up regarding the bigs, and I know you guys were talking about the 2021 class, which is a very large class, and you've mentioned guys like Leston at 6'8", for instance, and then some others, 6'9". I had them scrolling across the screen just a few minutes ago for our viewers. But some excellent size, and we've been going from, Jaden Gardner at 6'6", 6'6 and a half, whatever he truly is, to 7 feet with DeBoe and Coleman and Luster. There hasn't been those in-between guys with that athleticism.
I agree with you, Bubba. I like the move to getting some athletes in there that can move and run. Now, a lot of this league is that way. But I will tell you this. I don't think Joe's finished recruiting. I'm just telling you. Yeah, I think he's still out there. Trust me. Trust me on that. He's still looking at other kids that are really good players. And if he can get them, he's going to get them.
Somebody else I'm very excited about, Winston Tabbs, the kid out of Boston College, averaging 13 points a game, shooting right at 40% from three, playing a significant role for an ACC team.
No doubt about it. Winston Tabbs is a package guy that – you're not going to beat that at ECU. I mean, he scored 18 in a game against NC State last year or 2 years ago. He's a freshman. He is a real good. And from everything I'm hearing from our coaches, and these are guys that know guys up in his area, they say he is a great kid. Now, to be honest with you, they're going to have to run through some hoops to get him here. I mean, he wants to come, but there are things that have to be done. He's coming from an ACC school. He's got to get everything straight transferred, all of that stuff. But he is a good kid, everything I'm hearing, and very excited about him. Joe has been on this from day one. He's worked this deal, and Joe's the best. I'm telling y'all, his contacts are second to none. I'm just telling you. That's why I say I don't think we're through recruiting. If he can get good players, he's getting them.
Absolutely. And Si, before I get to – the next thing I had for you, Johnny Robertson chimes in. Johnny Robertson says, this is thoroughly enjoyable. I could listen to Si for hours, nonstop knowledge, and not one wasted second. Thank you.
Well, I'll tell you what. I appreciate Johnny, and he's I love it, and he must love it too. I mean, we're all, we're here, and I still think this could be a wonderful basketball program. We're starving for it. I will never forget ever coming back at 4 a.m. on that CIT trip, and there were 400 people streaming like crazy at the airport waiting for us. I'm telling you, it was an unbelievable scene at 4 a.m. They are starving for it, and we need to deliver, and I think we will. I think we will. I think we've got the right man. We just got to be patient. And I tell everybody that this is not a 1-2-3 year. You got to give time for this program to build.
What do we have to lose? I mean, you're looking at a situation with the program. We're like the Chicago Cubs of college basketball. We're losing. And I'm not saying that jokingly. It really hurts. Nobody wants to lose, but you have a few seasons here and there, but what did you have? 72, 93, 2013. There's only a few in the whole history book of modern D1 basketball, our time in D1, and that we've had winning seasons.
Right.
And it's not that we're happy about that, but that's just reality. So why would you not give a guy a chance to build the program the right way instead of, sometimes I think that I understand we're in a situation where we're in a wins and loss business. I mean, we have to be that. But at the same time, you can't microwave the program and then have the program lasting for a long, long time the way that Dooley and Houston and Cliff, those three coaches, are building it the right way. Cliff has been building it for a while, like you said, ahead of these guys, but they're building the right way so that it's sustainable.
No doubt about it. And I will tell you, too, ECU, and we all know this, has never made the real commitment to basketball. I'm talking about going back 60 years. I'm talking about going back with Stasinich. I mean, this was never – they always considered the Atlantic Coast Conference basketball, and we won't worry about it. Well, you have to. Once they change this tournament to 128 teams and you can get in it, the money needs to be moving that way. We have the lowest budget in the conference. We have probably, and I love Williams Arena, probably either the worst arena or right behind Tulane. Tulane's right behind, right above us as the worst. And listen, we built the practice facility, but until you have traveled all these arenas and you see what we're up against, I'm just telling you, and they'll say things like, well, another bad year, another this. No, you have to commit, and you have to commit financially to make this thing work. And that's just the way it is. And listen, we've done more in the last 6 years than the other 17 years I've been working with this program. We're doing more, but it takes more. And like I say, when you look at the end of the day, our budget is the lowest in the basketball budgets. And that's just the way it is. Baseball's number one, football in the middle of the pack. We are dead last by $1 million.
And Si, obviously we need fans in the stands for a variety of reasons, and obviously the revenue, but then also for, competitive advantage on the way Williams Arena Minji's Coliseum is, even when it's not full, when you have 4,000 or 4,500 people there, still a tremendous home court advantage. And like you're saying, given the facility's age and then the lack of amenities and so forth, it's even more important to have those fans in there and have a good atmosphere with some of the other things that's missing.
No doubt about it. And I will say this. All the places we go, I still say ECU fans are the most passionate. I'm just telling you. I think it started way back with football, baseball. We have a great support system of fans. They are passionate about East Carolina. And I think we're better than anybody that. We just got to set them on fire. We've got to get them on fire and let them enjoy it. And because you're right, we can be a rough place to play if we ever get it right in there. I'm telling you, it could be rough every night out.
Inside the very fact of you talking about Williams Arena. Hey, Bubba's so young, Si, but I know he was going to the games, but I'm so old that they were working on Williams Arena my senior year of college, and that was not last year. And you have to look at that very thing of, yes, I know all the financial stuff, but the thing that we have to think about is future. You can't build that arena or the improvements. You have to raise money. You have to have the architects. You have all that stuff. You have to studies and all that. And so that's the thing that frustrates me is that we're not looking ahead, or just announce it if you're looking ahead. But we need improvements for an indoor practice facility for football, and we need improvements to Williams Arena are the two priorities in my book. And there's stuff that Cliff wants that we need to give him because he's a top 25 program. You know what I'm saying? Like, those are things that are no-brainers for me.
Yeah, and I think the one thing you have to look at with basketball, Where are you going to get the most bang for your bucks? And that's the sport that's not making the money that it can make if we invest in it. And I think that's going to be a key that we do that. And thank God for Walter that he did that 20 to 30 years ago. But you know what I thought about there too? We play JMU. They're on their third arena since I've been doing this. And the new one is immaculate. You know, that's how fast it all changes. They're on their third arena. And then, yeah, and that's JMU. I mean, Cincinnati spent $80 million to redo theirs. I mean, it's crazy. So
we had the play-by-play voice of JMU on, Dave Thomas, and we talked about that new arena. I'm trying to remember. I don't know. It's at least $60, $70 million. And like you said, it's a beauty. I encourage folks to check it out. And, you know, coincidentally, JMU's who we played in the dedication game back in 1995 in the new.
Oh, that's right. I forgot that.
In what was then the new Williams Arena Menchie's Coliseum, the first game, I think, was East Tennessee State. And my family and I, we were traveling down. But unfortunately, some icy weather prevented us from getting there. But I remember that first ball game. And like you were saying, Si, not much had changed about the arena until here recently. We had made some improvements, but most of it was more maintenance rather than improvements.
Right. And really the practice facility was a great addition and needed, but it was needed. But that was just to have everyone else has that. I mean, it's crazy how this thing is. We just got to understand that this is a sport that can make money and you can get the players. We can, and we got to support it.
No question, Si, with you. Look at, you're talking about Williams Arena. I've often said that we've got to find a way coming soon. We've got to get a plan for a new arena. Basically, we've got a plan for a new arena at some point. If that's in conjunction with the city of Greenville, have a whole bunch of events. You know, a 10,000-seat arena, something like that. But we've got to partner with Greenville. I really believe in Pitt County, being how the city mayor, being a Pirate, is doing a great job. PJ Conley, give him a shout-out. With Pitt County is booming with all the industry and everything. But anyway, that very thing, I've always said that the last few years I've really come to the realization that my heart, how much I love Menchie's Coliseum and Williams Arena. Well, at some point, we've got to go ahead and start planning for a new arena the next 5 or 10 years, maybe if we can, the next 5 years, but 10 years for sure. I mean, it's already, 27 years?
Yeah. And what you said, Jody and I were talking about Jody Jones. We were saying the city of Greenville has grown and progressed so greatly. They need a 10,000-seat facility for concerts, for plays, whatever you want to do. And for ECU basketball, but that also leaves you Menchie's. Look, we need it for volleyball. We need it for if the girls play in there, wherever they play, you've got two facilities. And it would really be good to have two facilities of that magnitude. And I think eventually, I think it has to be a partnership between the city and the ECU.
Hey, Bubba, can we get PJ on the line to get him on and see if he can commit to an arena?
Hey, and that is something, Si, you're talking about the partnership with the city of Greenville. When we were previewing the Georgia State football game back in, I guess, late September, right. The folks we had on from Georgia State, they were talking about their new arena, and that's what it is. It's a partnership, with the city of Atlanta and you know, being a convocation center where they're going to have concerts and all sorts of events.
Yeah. And in fairness to Menchie's, it was a teaching facility for ECU is what it was. And we've done a nice job with trying to update it some, but it needs a lot more work right now. I often say that one of the things that you'll love is that they built the new practice facility. There's no washer and dryer for the basketball teams. They have to go out to the track area to wash.
You mentioned that before, Si. That's absurd.
Yeah. I've mentioned it before, but I always have to mention it because it's crazy. I mean, it's, you know, there are things we left out that we didn't do, but we keep pushing. That's all we can do as Pirate fans. And once we get this right, the things that most time ECU fans have the biggest problem with, they really want to compare to North Carolina and Duke. And you can't do that. Nobody does. You'll be miserable. I mean, they've had forever. They've been in the top 3 to 4% of the teams in the country. 3 to 4%. On bad years, they're 5%. You know, so what you do is you look at your program and you get what you want and do the best you can. And that's what we should do. And that's and we can get there. If you do that, you can be in the hunt for a lot of big games and a lot of big wins. I mean, Joe beat Houston this year, who was fifth in the country. And I'm telling you, he can do that more than you think. And this league, Dave, you mentioned it. This is a league that brings in big boys. And if you get it right, it could be rough.
Here in just a moment, we're going to be joined by Jeff Allen of the Nightline Sports Network and the AAC Report. But before we're joined by Jeff, we wanted to get your thoughts on Thursday's matchup. Obviously, the third time that East Carolina and UCF have squared off this season, the Knights have been victorious in the previous two competitive games. A game, the one in Orlando, UCF jumped out to a huge first half lead, and the Pirates came storming back, nearly pulled it out, but were, I think, kind of just out of gas there at the end. And then the game the other day in Greenville, it just could not get over the hump once again in the second half.
Yeah, that's a good question to ask about. First of all, UCF has a really good ball club. They've got a lot of talent. If anybody told me they'd lose Colin Smith and be this good, Colin Smith was a 6'11 man, and he decided to opt out because of COVID. But when you look at what he's done down there, what he's done is he took a lot of transfers. He's got a 5-star Mahan from Oregon that can really play. These kids that he has on that ball club are really, really good. And when you look at what he's done down there, now they're going to play man. They're going to play a matchup zone. But ECU's got to shoot it well. They have to shoot it well to beat this team. It is a talented team. I can tell you that. When you look at their ball club, I just think they are talented. They've had a pretty good year. But a lot of talent on that ball club. It's going to be difficult to beat that ball club. But I can tell you, these guards they have, Perry, Adams, Green, they're shooters. They can really fill it up. And ECU was right in it, but they lost it. And I think what you got to do, you got to hit well against them. You can't let them get transition buckets. And when you look at their coaching staff, it's a very good coaching staff. They're not going to let anything slip by.
No doubt. When you talk about Johnny Dawkins, you're talking about a guy that went to Duke, player of the year. I mean, you know, he's actually the first player of the year for Coach Mike Krzyzewski, a guy that at some point, you know, he may be, I don't think that people are giving him credit, but I think he has a shot whenever Coach K retires. A lot of Duke fans won't want to talk about that, but I think he's a guy that's done a really good job and at UCF. And you know, when who knows who they're going to pick, and that's not our decision, and we're ECU. But Johnny Dawkins has done a great job being a part of that Coach K coaching tree.
You're right. I think you got some brownie points with Wojciechowski when he brought Marquette in and beat North Carolina.
Yeah.
That was a pretty good day. Some brownie points. You're a funny story. You'll like this. When you've been in as long as I have, one of the coaches on his staff is Vince Taylor. Vince Taylor was one of the great Duke players when they were bad. I mean, really.
I remember I was living in Durham at the time. They were awful.
That's right. And Vince Taylor was a 6'6 kid that could slash, shoot, do it all. So I always go up to him, and we've got to be pretty tight, because I'll go up to him and I said, do these kids here understand you can whip every one of them? That's what I'll his team. He'll get laughing. And we talk about every game, and he's got a great staff. And, of course, the other assistant coach was at Campbell, and a really good coach. So it's a good staff. They do a great job. They've got a good area to recruit to, and they have done a marvelous job recruiting. They're very good. Don't let my kids. They hit the portal hard. They got the guard from Louisville. They've got the kid from Oregon. They've got a kid from VCU. I think they've got 4 or 5 kids in their lineup that are transfer portal. And that's the other way you recruit, you know. So like you and I, the old school, we want freshmen to move up. They've hit the portal pretty hard.
No question. When you're looking at the facts side with the very fact of that very thing, the one and done rule, I know that we could talk about that for hours, but I think the COVID maybe help those of us. Not, I don't love COVID, you know that, where I work. But as far as basketball, college basketball is concerned, I think it's helped us. I think all these people are doing one and dones, and of course, I hear the NBA is going to change the rule. If you're LeBron James, I was thinking about this Sunday with the All-Star game. If you're LeBron James, is it fair that LeBron James would with it? Of course, he came before the rule. But let's say LeBron James is out there right now. Is it fair for LeBron James to have to go to school and college for a year? If he's already good, he should already be gone.
Right.
And that will help us with all the – I think that also player development is not there like it used to be, in my opinion. If you're an analyst for ECU or whoever you are, like Cy Seymour, the guy knows 500 or 700 players, but they changed the names on the back of the jerseys changed so fast. So I don't know. You and Jeff are the best at it.
I wrote today to several ECU fans. This will tell you how different it is. The five kids that made the all ACC team. Okay. One last year was the point guard for Radford. He made our first team all ACC for Louisville. That's how good he is. Another kid who was Virginia's all-conference kid, he was at Marquette. The third kid I was going to bring up was Moses Wright. Moses Wright was not recruited by anybody. He played for Enloe High School. They were in last place. He was 6'11". My son was coaching at Wake Forest, and Wake Forest High School. He said, Dad, there is a kid that they're in last place. Nobody's looking at him, but this kid's going to be a dominant player. So Kenny Ptasznik went over, and when he got there, there was UNC Charlotte's head coach. And that lit us up to say, uh-oh, Cy might have been this. Here's Mark Price. He's sitting at this 4A high school last place team looking at Moses Wright. Georgia Tech comes in late, picks him up. He's the player of the year in the ACC. And what my point is, what you're saying, here's three guys that are totally different kids that made the first five of the Atlantic Coast Conference. That's how much the game has changed.
Wow. So do you think we should do all transfer portal then?
No, I don't. I can't take it. I do know that I'm telling you, there are two or three top teams. I'll give you names. Jankovic has said at SMU, I'm looking at the portal only. I mean, and he is a tremendous coach. And you can get so many good players. But I'm just saying, where does this all stop? When does it come back to talking to the high school coaches, finding out what kind of kid he is in school? And I don't know if we'll see it, Dave. I don't know. But I know this. Nobody will work this system, all three phases of it, AAU, high schools, and portal. Nobody better than our head coach. I'm telling you, nobody. He and Rock and those other guys, that whole staff, they know what they're doing.
So before we let you go, because you've been on with us a long time, I could talk to you for hours about life and basketball, my friend. What are the chances we win on tomorrow night? Do you think we have Thursday night?
Well, we have a chance because Joe Dooley and his staff are there, and we've got good kids. You got to shoot the lights out to beat them. And you cannot turn it over, and you've got to out-rebound a team that can really hit the boards. It's going to take a little help from them. And we got to play great, but we can do it. We can do it.
Well, Cy, we're looking forward to the call on Thursday. Very excited. In fact, that's at 7 o'clock. It's at 6:30 airtime for you guys on the Learfield IMG College.
Yeah.
Pirate Ready Sports Radio.
You got it right.
Yeah, I got it. Hey, Bubba, I got it right twice. He's going to be.
Bubba, he did.
Do I get extra pay, Bubba? I've been practicing. Do I get extra pay for that?
Yeah, I put it on the screen for you, too.
Okay. Well, I wasn't looking at it, honestly. I'm trying to pay attention to Cy. If I start looking at the crawl there, then I'll take my eyes off the I'll be totally lost. I can only do one thing at a time, Bubba. Bubba's the only guy of the three that can multitask better than anybody. But Cy, thank you so much. I know that you guys will be there staying home, and I can't wait for you guys to give me like Willie Nelson. You get to go on the road again.
It'll be great when we can. And you're talking about our conference. I look forward. I really like our commissioner. I think Oresco's the best in the business.
Yes.
We're very fortunate.
Yes, we are. We look forward to it. Thank you so much. We appreciate you, buddy. And hopefully we can get us some wins. Maybe we get some wins out of the tournament. It'd be great.
Let's go for it. Let's hope so.
All right.
Appreciate you, Cy.
Anytime. Appreciate it so much. Good talk to you guys.
Good time. Enjoyed it. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Great stuff there from Cy Seymour. And of course, now we go from one buddy to another, a guy that's down, I believe, in the Orlando area. Right, Bubba?
Absolutely. Always enjoy catching up with this guy. Welcome in from the Nightline Sports Network. He does a tremendous job for them with the AAC report. Jeff Allen. Jeff, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, except Dave caused me a little bit of concern there talking about Johnny Dawkins to Duke. It's like, we've had enough upheaval down here. Let's not be taking Johnny before we're ready.
I was just saying there's a lot of people that think that Jeff Capel will be the next in line. It could be anybody with that program that Coach K has built up. I think that just Johnny D, I don't want to take him away from you guys. I'm just saying that I'm trying to give him respect that he doesn't get in the big college landscape of things with college basketball. But I've got a question for you guys. Jeff, you know Bubba's coming down your way with the family there for to see Mickey Mouse. So maybe you can show him the ropes, show him Orlando.
Hey, be happy to do that. That would be a thrill.
Need the campus tour.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go. Central Florida.
There you go. You just tell me when you're coming, Bubba.
Dickie's Arena this week. Obviously, the arena opened up, I believe, October of 19. Jeff, unfortunately, last year for people, I can't imagine how they missed out with COVID. But this was when conference tournaments were shutting down. Our people are down there in East Carolina, and all of a sudden they're told to get back on the plane. They have to. Kyle Robinson, the director of operations, did an excellent job to get everybody home. But now the women's tournament's going on. That's going well. The men's tournament cranking up. How do you think about, first off, before we would talk about UCF ECU, what do you think about that arena?
Yeah, that's a sweet little deal they've got there in Fort Worth. And you think about all the things they have going on in the Metroplex now. You know, they have the Star in Frisco. They host tournaments now, and it is really quite a testament to you know, how they've kind of circled around for college basketball. And of course, the Americans' home offices are now in the Lone Star State in that area. So kind of cool that they get to play it there.
No question, and it's exciting to have just the fact that we can have basketball. Now we have March Madness going on, Jeff, and how do you feel about the very fact of looks like we're going to have, looks like we'll probably have two teams in the big dance this year with, I would say, Houston and Wichita State?
Yeah, I would say those are definitely locks, and, you know, Memphis is, you know, kind of on the bubble. They, you know, could they have done enough to get in? You know, that was a tremendous game on Sunday between Houston and Memphis. I mean, we had a playoff game to get things kicked off there. That was an incredible finish. And you know, and both teams, you know, they were fighting tooth and nail. They wanted that two seed. And it's interesting, you know, to think that Houston could have ended up being a three seed, even though they are the class of the conference.
It's crazy, and that shot was incredible. I mean, that game, I tell people all the time that I obviously know the men's league pretty well, but I love watching the deal that we have on ESPN with ESO. It's outstanding, where we can watch a lot of these games just in our lifetime. Jeff and Bubba's, the three of us, our lifetime, how that there's more avenues, more ways that we can watch content and to be able to see our league. I mean, it's such a good league. And just to have this tournament, I'm so excited about this week because I know that we're going to have a good brand of basketball in Fort Worth.
Yeah. And definitely. And Sunday gives us that flavor of that. You know, and you look at, you know, Wichita State is a one seed. They've had a tremendous year. And look at what a powder keg that could have been with the Greg Marshall situation. You know, that could have just been a huge disaster, but Isaac Brown, you know, he gets the interim job. He does a tremendous job. He got, you know, the fact that they had some good key players coming back like Dexter Dennis and Tyson Etienne, was very key. And, you know, I kind of look at this in an interesting way. You know, Wichita State, you know, learned that stepping up from the Missouri Valley to the American was a bigger step than they probably anticipated. And they hadn't really knocked down the doors yet. And then, you know, and not to take away anything that Greg Marshall has done. He's built Wichita State into a mini basketball power. But you look at the fact that, you know, maybe a change of voice was a good thing for them this year. And Isaac Brown now is going to be the permanent head coach, testimony to what an outstanding job he did this season.
And with Isaac Brown, you made a great point there with the, from what I heard, the players fought really hard just for him to be the interim coach is what I heard. And they had so much love and respect for him. You heard that, you know, you always hear that, Jeff, but it really has translated on the court this year. I mean, they've been playing, like you said, that's one of the storylines, I think, for the American looking back is obviously COVID would be number one with all the mess we've had to deal with that. But certainly Isaac Brown, the job he's done there in Wichita, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it really is a great story. And, again, it's great that he had a talented roster to work with. But you know they've got a lot of transfers. They've managed to come together. And like you said, you know, a lot of times, you know, the most popular, you know, it's like the backup quarterback. Sometimes the most popular guy is the assistant coach, right? But if you want to prove you want him to be the man, you got to do it on the court. You can't just be lip service. And to what you said, I think that's a great point.
I'm looking forward to the tournament this week. Obviously, UCF. We're going to talk about that matchup before we get into the dive into the game with you, me, and Bubba. What are there some dark horses? Are there teams that you're were you doing the AAC report? What team comes to mind as one like Dave, Bubba? You better watch out for them.
Yeah, you know it's really hard to say because I'll tell you what an interesting storyline is SMU. You know they haven't played in a month. And, you know, so, okay, depending on how bad COVID affected them, they'll have fresh legs. But we've seen what COVID pauses have done to teams. South Florida be a perfect example. You know, they've lost 7 of 8 since coming back from their pause. So to think that, you know, they're going to have a chance against Cincinnati when they open up in the quarterfinals on Friday, you know, I think that's a very tall order. But then again, you know how this season has gone. them coming in and winning that game would not be a shock to me in that respect. And the interesting part of that storyline is Ben Stout, who is our basketball analyst, and he and I did a preview show for the AAC report this week. He checked into the situation with SMU. You know what happens if they can't play? So prior to 48 hours, if SMU decides they cannot play, or it's decided they can't play, what happens then is everybody moves up a slot. So that would be an interesting change. So Cincinnati would become the 4, UCF would become the 5. If it's 48 hours within, then Cincinnati would just be advanced if SMU can't play. So they would basically get a bye. And move on to the next round to potentially play Wichita State. So that to me is a very intriguing storyline. Could that potentially happen? So tomorrow is a pretty important day, I guess, as far as SMU's fate in the tournament. So I haven't heard anything, you know, that they're not going to be able to play, but they've been off a long time. So we'll have to see what happens there. The other intriguing team to me would be Tulsa as the 7 seed. You know, they were co-regular season champions last year, and this year they were near the top of the conference, but then the bottom fell out and they had not played well and they lost their confidence. But you look at, you know, a team that has Brandon Rochal and the, you know, Elijah Joyner, and the kind of guys in the way they can play, if they play to how we know they can play, they could be trouble. And I also think this is probably a pivotal situation because, you know, Frank Haith is probably on a hot seat. You know, they have a new president coming in. You know, it could be interesting. You know, did he lose the team this season? Do they need to win the conference tournament to save his job? So I think those are a couple of the intriguing storylines. So I think of the bottom half of the bracket, you know, Tulsa could be a team that could be dangerous because we know they're capable, but can they put it together?
Yeah, John Brandon's ball club, the Pirates lost, I think it was by 13 to Cincinnati on Sunday afternoon. But they're playing tremendous basketball. Keith Williams was clutch time and again in that ball game, and then also Mattson, he knocked down 5 triples. So I think Cincinnati is certainly a team to keep an eye on as we begin play on Thursday.
Yeah, and they were a team that kind of struggled to get their legs underneath them to start the season, but as you said, they managed to get it together. Keith Williams is a tremendous player, and we know that John Brannon, he's good at coaching tournament basketball, so that definitely can make them a team that could be potential, and they are in the upper part of the bracket, so. They are definitely a team worthy of contending.
And certainly, Jeff, we're going to talk about our matchup with ECU and UCF. But this is a type of year, and I'll correlate both here. But with the men's basketball tournament, with March Madness, the Big Dance, and with conference tournaments, anything is possible. Lots of there's been upsets already, and other conference tournaments that have been played. And you better believe that this week, with Championship Week, it's going to be. It's going to be crazy, but that little, the name of March Madness is going to start way earlier this year, I think.
Yeah, it really started Sunday, didn't it? I mean, just looking at that aspect, and and that's what I love about this time of year. Unlike our brethren in college football, college basketball has it right with their playoff, because even though it's still slanted more towards the power teams, the blue bloods, the other teams still have a chance. They get a seat at the table, and and if they get on a run, things can happen. I mean, we look at what Butler played for a national championship, right? Loyola Chicago made an incredible Final Four run. George Mason, Florida Gulf Coast was a second weekend team a few years ago. So that to me is what the beauty of these, especially when we get to this time of year with the conference tournaments and the Big Dance, that you see this the potential there to where, okay, why can't football introduce this kind of magic? I think that would be tremendous.
I bring up the stat all the time, and I'm not hating on football because I love it a lot with college football, but pro football is number one, college football is number two. College football could be the number one sport in America. They will be the For college football people, you will be the number one sport in America when you get your playoff system right. When you get off your old self, and that we got to do it the old way, and the regular season doesn't matter, and all these excuses. When you finally realize how much money you can make, and when you have networks to say that we're not going to do anything until then, you give us more games, more inventory. You're going to be number one. Wouldn't you like to be the number one sport in America? I mean, everybody wants to be number one. You could be the number one sport in America if you make the playoff change. Enough said, because we got a basketball we can talk about. Right, Bubba?
Oh, sure. My thoughts there as far as expanding it from at least 4 to 8, but we'll see where that goes in coming years. I think that's on the way, but we shall see. But, getting back to things, Jeff, you were naming off some of the Cinderellas down through the years, the likes of a George Mason, Butler twice, playing for national titles. You had VCU as an 11 seed, one of the last four in, making the run to the Final Four when Jay Billis and some others didn't think they should have even been in the tournament. Obviously, Loyola, I guess, is the most recent Cinderella story. Who are some that you think had that potential this year? Some that really come to mind, and you have Winthrop, they've had an excellent year, but who are some that you really like?
Well, it's interesting because, as you run down that list, I also go back and think about, once upon a time, Gonzaga was that team, right? That shocked everybody. And now they've become a basketball powerhouse. So, look at what the potential to grow from that is as well. It is interesting. You look at the Cinderellas. It's kind of hard to pick that this year. I mean, I'm kind of copping out on my answer a little bit here, because you could see a number of Cinderellas this year, just basically on how this season has gone. We don't know how things are going to develop in Indiana. I mean, this potential bubble situation, quasi bubble, if you will. are we going to have any postponements? Are we going to have any cancellations? You know, to me, it's very hard to predict on any scale other than, you know, I think we clearly know Gonzaga and Baylor are the two best teams in the country. Beyond that, I'm not sure what we really know at all.
Hey, and here a moment ago, I brought up Loyola, Illinois, the Ramblers. They're 24-4 and ranked 18th, so maybe the Ramblers have another run in them.
They could, and you know, but I wouldn't. As good a team as they have this season, I wouldn't really consider them a Cinderella. I think they're definitely
absolutely,
a tremendous team.
Hey, yeah. Bubba, what, you haven't mentioned
the only reason they would be a quote Cinderella in a lot of people's eyes is because they're called their name's Loyola and not a household name.
Right, absolutely. Right, hey, exactly. Bubba, what about your favorite team? You haven't talked about App State. I mean, they had an incredible run. And this, I'm joking, of course, the Sun Belt. They have an incredible, what was it, Bubba? Was it four overtime? How many overtime games did they have? App had a whole bunch of overtime games. Well,
they won four straight games. I think two of those four were in overtime. They defeated Georgia State 80-73 last night. It is not that surprising to me. Dustin Kearns, we had him on our State of North Carolina Division I basketball preview back, I guess, late October, early November, and it was not surprising to see the Mountaineers make that run. He's doing a tremendous job there in Boone.
No question about it. We're excited about for App State fans. Obviously, they get that'll be a team to look out for. You never know who's going to bid. But guys, do you want to talk about the ECU UCF matchup?
Let's do it.
All right. So let's talk about that. I know Bubba, you and Jeff, you want to go ahead and talk stats. Y'all are very good with stats, so I'll yield my time to Bubba for. To talk some stats and I'll chime in with you guys.
Yeah, we're touching on some of this with Cy Seymour, East Carolina's color analyst, here just a few minutes ago. But two very close ball games, both UCF was obviously victorious. East Carolina played from behind, I think maybe like an 18-point deficit in that first matchup down in Orlando. But UCF is very good shooting the three and, you know, can really create some mismatches. And they were able to do that with their guard play the other day as, you know, and they had a lot of success taking the ball to the hole, particularly there down the stretch.
Yeah, and I did get a chance to hear Cy, and what he said was pretty spot on about the fact that, you know, East Carolina is going to need to be able to knock down shots and really try to stretch UCF's defense because, you know, defense is their calling card. And I think that's going to be a key element of the game. And I would also say that, you know, East Carolina, having played UCF and twice already, there's going to be no secrets, right? So there is potential there. And you look at what UCF does on offense sometimes when they're rolling, they can play with anybody. And, you know, Darius Perry, Brandon Mahan, our freshman of the week, Isaiah Adams. I mean, you just Darren Green, when these guys get it going, they're really, really good, but they tend to have these long stretches and these long droughts where they don't score. They don't move the ball. They get a little three ball happy when they're not making them. And they let teams back into games. I mean, the Knights had Wichita State essentially beaten twice this year and could not contain leads. And the Knights are not very good at handling the press. That has been one weakness of a Johnny Dawkins team in his time here is teams that press them give them trouble. So I would think that, you know, if it's a, you know, a tight game and East Carolina can press them, there could be some opportunity there. You know, Jaden Gardner is such a great player. You know, I've admired him for quite some time and, you know, really, you know, just admire the way he plays and, you know, just a gamer. And when you have a guy like that, that can, you know, carry your team, you certainly always have a chance.
Well, yeah, Bubba, Darius,
Darius Perry was the name that was escaping me a moment ago. That's who the Pirates really, really struggled to defend or in last week's game. I think he finished with 13 and 11. It seemed they were such big buckets on key points when the Pirates had cut it to 2 or 3 or 4 points, and Perry would take somebody off the dribble or knock down a big shot. But 13 points, 11 rebounds, and also 5 or 6 assists. He did a little bit of everything. I also had 3 or 4 steals.
Yeah, and he's a good ball hawk, and you know, leads the team in steals. And yeah, as you said, he's the leading scorer. He's the leading dish man. He is the kind of the glue of the team in this 2021 season. I always struggle saying 2020 and 2021 together. But they do have guys that are capable of carrying the scoring load, as we've seen. Brandon Mahan's had some great games during the season. He's one of those guys that has that microwave potential. Once he buries a couple, he can make it a long night for somebody. And he is the second leading scorer in the team. And Darren Green, 40% shooter from the field. It'd be very scary if Green, Mahan, and Perry all got hot at the same time. That would be kind of the dream scenario for UCF.
And Jeff and Bubba, one of the things that we've talked about is certainly 3-point shooting for the Pirates has been definitely the elephant in the room last year and this year, specifically with this year. I tell you, the player that I'm looking forward to tomorrow night, look at how J.J. Miles is shooting. It seems like when J.J. Miles is on and he's hitting the threes, the three ball, the triples, if you will, as Bubba would say, then the team has a chance. But, man, if the three-pointers are not coming from him specifically and some others, ECU will have a long night against. I know that's stating the obvious, but J.J. Miles, Bubba, is the one I'm looking for.
Yeah, the other night, Dave, Tristan Newton, who struggled so mightily in league play prior to the last couple games, he shot the ball better. He was 3 out of 26 in AAC play through the Pirates' first 10 conference games, and then against UCF in Greenville, excuse me, knocked down 4 out of 6. And it was funny, I was on the Sons of UCF preview show, and they asked me people to keep an eye on, and I mentioned Tristan Newton. I said maybe tonight he comes out of it. So hopefully he'll have another solid outing down in Fort Worth.
Yeah, and I also would want to mention too, you know, again, knowing what we know about this year and how the unpredictable is the predictable sometimes, East Carolina's lost a lot of games in a row to UCF, right? You know, it wouldn't surprise me if they were able to turn the tables in the conference tournament. Just the way the year has gone, I don't think you can count on anything being for certain.
Jeff, go ahead, Dave.
I was just going to make one quick point, Bubba. Sorry. They beat Houston, and that Memphis game on the road, we had Memphis. There's some games we've had teams on the ropes, and we've got to find if East Carolina can find a way to close out these games, then they'll have the chance. The problem they've had is they've had a really difficult time finding ways to win late in the game.
Yeah, and you know, when it's and the other aspect of this game is, congratulations if you win, you get Memphis, right? they're playing some great ball right now, and and UCF has not matched up against Memphis at all very well. And in fact, they had to play consecutive games at Memphis and were pretty much blown out in both of them. And it's, and if the chalk holds up, it's almost a shame that Houston and Memphis are a semifinal matchup and not the final. But that said, if the chalk holds out, Wichita State Houston or Wichita State Memphis is, if everything plays out, you're still going to get a pretty quality championship game if the chalk primarily plays out.
Jeff, and talk about all the action within the athletic department down there in Orlando over the last month and a half or so, with the new AD being hired from Arkansas State, Terry Mahajer, and then also, of course, Gus Malzahn. He's put together a tremendous staff. So, give Pirate fans and others who may be tuned in the Cliff Notes version about the staff and just your thoughts on those hires.
Yeah, you mean things have been going on down here? It's been a little nuts. Danny White leaving for Tennessee. He takes Josh Heupel with him. I don't know that Heupel was his first choice, but nonetheless, he took a guy he knew. So you have two vacancies, right? In a short amount of time, you have to hire the athletic director first, and you got to get that one right. And, you know, Terry Mahajer coming from Arkansas State, you look at what he has done with that program there. He's made them one of the attractive group of five teams. I still hate using the term group of five and hope we can get away from that someday. But, he is a high energy guy. He's, he and his family do TikTok videos. He does pushups on the sideline, headbutts players. He's one of those high energy guys. And from what I understand that we learned on a Knights Roundtable recently, he's got a lot of Forbes connections. So he knows people who have bucks in their pocket. So he's going to be able to maintain what Danny White has done as far as the funding and things like that go. And then we go to hire the football coach. And Gus Malzahn and Terry Mahajer worked together at Arkansas State. Now, Mahajer did not hire him, but he was there. Mahajer left for Auburn, obviously, for greener pastures. But you look at getting a guy like Gus Malzahn and the credentials that he carries, is a guy that as an offensive coordinator at Auburn prior to Arkansas State won a national championship and had Cam Newton. And then, and he's managed to pull a few victories over Nick Saban in Alabama. So to have a guy with his credentials and his credibility be available, I initially was lukewarm on that because I just didn't want Gus Malzahn to be a retread kind of situation where he comes in and says, see ya, the first Power Five that comes knocking. I'm not saying that still won't happen, but at his press conference, you could see the energy. You could, it was one of those things, no coach comes into his press conference and says, well, we strive to be mediocre and we're not going to move the football and all that. Everybody comes in with the grand statements of what they want to be. And all of that is great, but I want to see it in the guy's eyes. And you could see that he won the press conference. And you look at what he is doing with his staff. He's hiring, obviously people that have worked with him at Auburn. He's got some Auburn transfers coming in. Well, I guess now we're going to find out how Auburn would do in the AAC. if you look at what he's bringing, some of that flavor to UCF. And now, the recruiting emphasis is going to be back on the state of Florida. Josh Heupel had very few recruits from the state of Florida in this last recruiting class. And there's lots to be had here. Even if you don't get the four and fives, three stars is still pretty good from the state of Florida. So the emphasis on in-state recruiting is going to be tremendous. So it'll be great to see what happens, but we went from a situation of, despair, essentially, when Danny White left for Tennessee. And then in just a short amount of time, I think we've gotten both those hires dead on.
No question. Jeff, before we let you go, I know that we kept you longer here tonight, but the very fact that I'm wondering, I'm not an Auburn fan, but if you don't think that Alabama winning and your rival winning a national championship will make you do crazy things, in the dictionary, see Auburn. But I think it worked out nicely for you guys. And you guys have an excellent coach who won a national championship. Like you said, Coach Cam Newton. I know they're not winning national championships, but in the SEC, especially in the SEC West, that's a very difficult division, to say probably the best division undoubtedly in the whole country. And just to think that you're going to get rid of a coach, we could talk all night about that, but very happy for you guys. And I know that the one thing about it is you guys continue to the reputation you have to reload, and man, you got a steal with Malzahn. I'm really happy for you guys.
Yeah, and I think one of the other things that both Terry Mahajer and Gus Malzahn are kind of bringing a little bit of the flavor back that kind of got started under Scott Frost is, you know, they got a little more swagger back, I think. You know, they've got this big billboard campaign where, you know, where they're promoting UCF football. They've actually got some boards in Alabama and Georgia saying that, you know, this is going to be the center of college football. And you look at that, and I've always maintained, you know, I know there were the haters that thought, you know, UCF felt entitled and things like that. But the bottom line is, if you want to be big time, you got to act big time. You know, if you don't walk the walk, you're not going to get and talk the talk. You're not going to get there. So I think these guys are going to bring that back to UCF, which I think has been kind of sorely missing. You know, Josh Heupel, you know, he's a pretty reserved guy, at least to us externally. Now, to inside with the team, he's probably a little more fired up, but. You look at that, and he just never said anything in a press conference, or it was pretty, you know, standard flair. I think, you know, the fact that, you know, Gus Malzahn, and he even said, you know, he wasn't really looking, but UCF was attractive. And you also got to know that he's, oh my God, they got a quarterback, you know, to get to coach Dylan Gabriel, who's put up incredible numbers, to see what he might be able to do with Gus Malzahn is definitely something I'm looking forward to.
Definitely happy to have him in the league and have him against Mike Houston. It's going to be fantastic in the fall. And the fact that by the way, Jeff, our athletes in East Carolina are getting vaccinated. It's only March, you know, they could have done that in January, but anyway, it's a whole nother show as they say, but I'm happy. My point is that we're going to have college football. It's going to be there. We're going to have fans in the stands. It would be close to, it'd be nice to have 100%, but we'll take whatever we get. And we appreciate you coming on tonight. And before we let you go, how can people find your work?
Well, certainly. I do a couple of shows, obviously with the AAC Report on the Nightline Sports Network. You can get that at UCF Nightline. We post a show every week. And this week, as I mentioned earlier, Ben Stout, a former UCF player, and actually made his debut doing an ESPN Plus game this year. He's our basketball analyst, and we broke down the tournament, so we can you can get some more tournament talk on this week's show. And also Jeff Allen Sports Talk, which is my own show. I release that each and every week, and you can find that wherever you can find your podcasts. And my guest this week, local sports director J.D. Say from Channel 6, she actually got a sit-down interview with Gus Malzahn and shared a little bit of that with us as well. So that's the programming. And at Jeff Allen _88, you can find me on Twitter as well. Would love to have you follow along.
All right, my friend. Good luck. And make sure you get some prime rib for Bubba this week when he visits. And I'm sure you'll give Mickey Mouse a big hug.
It, absolutely. We will do that. And I'll be looking forward to having you guys on the AAC Report because it's time to talk some East Carolina baseball. So look forward to having you guys do that.
Anytime. We'll be glad to. As anytime you need us, we'll be glad to do it. All right, Jeff. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate you very much. Have a good one. You got it.
Take care, guys.
All right. See you later. Jeff Allen there. Appreciate him very much, as always. And, well, what a great show. Two great guests. Two of our good friends. So we appreciate him so much. And Bubba, I know that Pirates defeated Duke. Thank you for putting that up there. 11-5, improved to 10-2, and sweep the series. And I love the stats you put up there. ECU has beat Duke 20 out of 21. And we think about the program that Duke has now with Chris Pollard, what they're building in Durham, two super regionals in the last few years. It's impressive to see 20 out of 21 against Duke.
Yeah, this certainly isn't your Duke team from, you know, from back in the 90s or even throughout the 2000s prior to Coach Pollard's arrival, back-to-back super regionals in 2018 and 2019. Just one moment.
All right, yeah, Chris Pollard is a great coach, and my hometown at Durham, Duke baseball, maybe back in the day, but certainly in my lifetime, it's not been as big, but he coming in the last handful of years has done a great job with the program.
Yeah, he really has, and forgive me there for a moment. Got to love here in Rowan County. Had a liquor sickle coming by, but I knew you'd like that.
A friend of mine, I haven't heard talk to him in a while. That was one of his favorite things. I'm going to have to text him.
But yeah, Pirates win 11-5 over Duke after winning game one at Clark LeClair 6-1, you know, a couple weeks ago, I guess now. But this ball game, it was back and forth there from the second inning. You know, a lot of two-out damage done by both clubs. Pirates put up four in the top of the second, then the Blue Devils responded with three. And, you know, really where East Carolina kind of grabbed control of the game was there. I think the sixth inning, the Pirates put up four more. You had a three-run home run by Connor Norby, his fourth of the year. At one point there in the middle innings, you had Seth Cadell hitting his sixth home run of the season. What a tear he's been on as well. I think he's driven in at least somewhere between 15 and 20 runs now. I know he had 15 coming into the night. Wow. And you had five Pirates with two hits in this ball game. The final line was 11 runs on 14 hits and two errors for East Carolina, and five runs on nine hits and two errors for the Blue Devils. And C.J. Mayhew really came in. I think he threw 45 to 50 pitches and really shut down Duke and allowed the Pirates to pick up the six-run win.
He did that a couple weeks ago in the midweek game in Greenville. It was lights out for him. And then again, hey, by the way, Bubba, I'm going to go ahead and put in my vote. We've had three straight weeks, fourth straight week of Connor Norby, PGX Player of the Week. What do you think? Can I just go ahead and put Connor Norby in there?
You can't bet against the man. He was one of those five guys with two hits tonight. He was 2-for-6 in the leadoff spot and drove in four runs, three of them coming on that big home run there.
And Bubba, quickly, I know that we're running out of time and we're going long tonight, but very happy to see the Pirates doing well in the polls, right? I mean, it looks like one poll was at ninth. I mean, they have us in the top 10.
Yeah, six college baseball polls that are typically referenced. The Pirates are ranked in the top 15 in at least five of those six polls. I have not seen the NCBWA poll. I tried to. I don't think it's been released yet.
Okay.
So we'll see when this week's poll comes out. Pirates are probably top 15 in all six polls because they were 16th a week ago in the Baseball Writers Association poll, and as high as ninth in collegiate baseball. And this weekend, a very improved Charlotte team will be coming to Clark LeClair. And last I had heard, you know, they're fairly late in that ball game against Tennessee, a Tennessee team that's ranked in the top 20.
Yeah.
I think Charlotte was up 6-0. So 49ers, I don't know if it's final, but my guess is that the 49ers picked up a huge non-conference win, and I'll be catching up with Robert Woodard, the head coach of Charlotte, and he'll be on tomorrow night's program along with Patrick Johnson of 94.3 The Game.
No question. I tell you what right now, that team in Charlotte has made a huge comeback and definitely rising up. And if we don't put our best bowl games on at Clark LeClair, another homestand for the Pirates this weekend. Like Bubba said, got a big game there. We have, of course, coming up, we'll have Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Looks like 6:30 Friday night first pitch for those listening, 4 o'clock on Saturday, and, of course, the 1 o'clock rule by the American. They have that rule that you have to start the game at 1 o'clock on Sunday. So those three games in Charlotte on ESPN Plus. Extra innings, want to thank our good friends Trent Brett, Gaynell Brett, Next Level Training Center. Appreciate them so much for all they do. They are so awesome. And we'll have Corey Glore coming on to talk recap Duke at the DBAP tonight, and of course Clark LeClair with Charlotte. And we also, Bubba, I know that it's a baseball, we've been talking baseball, but we also are covering the women's basketball tournament at Dickey's Arena and the men's basketball tournament. We have post-game comments, right? I want for everybody to go there and check out those comments and we're participating in the press conference.
Just go to YouTube and search the Sports Objective, and you'll see we have it all in one playlist, the women's championship as well as the men's championship, every single press conference with coaches' remarks from the winning and losing teams, and then also a player from each team. So definitely go in and check that out. later on tonight, and tonight being Tuesday the 9th, East Carolina is in action down in Texas.
Busy week, folks, but we're having two sports. We're having to hopefully the Pirates can win this weekend. That'll be fantastic and go to the big dance. But right now having to cover basketball and, of course, baseball at the same time means a lot more coverage and a lot more content for you. That's good for the fans. All right. Appreciate Cy Seymour, the Learfield IMG College analyst, with he and Jeff Charles, as they have the big game coming up Thursday night at 7 o'clock against UCF. And, of course, Jeff Allen, appreciate him very much as well, given the UCF perspective. Thank you, Bubba, for all that you do, my friend, behind the scenes. Until next time, you've been watching and listening to The Sports Objective. Good night, everybody. Go Pirates. Up and lean side to side. Set the tone with your pirate pride. Put your crossbones up for your pirates. Ain't no business, roll out the water. Put your crossbones up and lean side to side. Set the tone with your pirate.